This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 5. That's right, Franchise Hockey Manager 5 is now available worldwide, just in time for the start of the NHL season. Franchise Hockey Manager 5 delivers new community-requested features, including dramatically improved tactics, an all-new interface, player and staff personalities, new team chemistry, accurate rosters for the 2018-19 season, and even better, online leagues. Fans have been asking for them for years, and we have been able to deliver them this year. We're very excited. There is no better way to celebrate the NHL season than by getting Franchise Hockey Manager 5. And you get it today for 10% off. If you go buy it on Steam, you can get it for just $35.99 between now and October 12th. And you can also get it directly from OOTPdevelopments.com. We are so excited for Franchise Hockey Manager 5. It's absolutely officially licensed by the NHL. It's the only NHL licensed game available on PC. It is an incredibly deep and fun hockey strategy game. You can take any NHL franchise from today or any time in the history of the league and see how you can stack up again and try to win the Stanley Cup. And there's a whole bunch of international clubs and international play, foreign leagues, all sorts of great stuff, historical challenges. Man, Franchise Hockey Manager 5 is bigger, smarter, and more fun than any franchise hockey manager. We're very excited. Go check out Franchise Hockey Manager 5, available on Steam or directly from OTP Developments today. Enjoy the show.
Okay. I'm back with Rich Grisham. We're back together, Rich. I'm Brian Wiedeye, Pasta Padre, as we reunite here on the Press Row Podcast. How you been, Rich? I know you had a good episode last week with a couple big figures in the sports gaming community.
I am doing great. Thank you, Brian. I always love talking to you. I always love doing this show. Last week was super fantastic with Dazar and Frisk. Those guys are great. I mean, it's just so cool to see people who love to do something and have it be a hobby and then it becomes a career. And then they also get to be really influential in those things. It's just amazing. And it's so cool that those guys came on. That was a lot of fun. Those guys are inspirational.
Including in previously having talked to Scott O'Gallagher, what's your main takeaway from having talked to them, whether it be specific to this year's game or specific to just the development process?
You have to be really smart is one thing. All three of those guys are really, really sharp. Scott and Nino, the czar, know basketball and know video game basketball at a level that is really amazing. And they don't even go into a ton of detail, but you can just tell from the things that they say that they are just really smart. And Marcus Frisk is really smart. I'm just going to come out wrong, but not in a game development way, but in a just how he sort of is able to determine what's successful and what people will like in a field, digital media that is barely 10 or 15 years old. And, just chatting with them, they're just really, really smart. And they are, it's really challenging to do what they do because that they all want all sorts of things. And it's very challenging. And my takeaway is that those if you want to be in the AAA video games business, you have got to be really, really good. And that it's really difficult. You can tell when Czar and Scott are talking. They're very proud of what they've got, but they also want a lot more. And now that they've both been there for 3 or 4 years, it sounds like they recognize that it really is a very process is the word I'm looking for, but a very deliberate process. And I think it's because these games have so many different parts to them from a technology perspective, just to put them together is such an enormous effort. To do certain things takes 2, 3, 4, 5 years worth of design and programming and testing and things like that. So, You asked a simple question and I rambled, but my takeaway is that they are really smart and that it's really challenging. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Just it's, you know, to put these things together takes an enormous amount of effort from a lot of really smart people.
Okay. So we're into, it's October. most of the sports games are out. We still got NBA 2K Playgrounds too coming. But so just what's on your mind? You know, what do you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned right before we started recording, Brian, it's a Thursday and it's one of the best sports days of the year. And the only other time that happens is Thanksgiving, and that's only for football. Brian, today we have an NFL game, we have two baseball playoff games, and we've got NHL regular season stuff all happening right now. This is so much the best time of year. I love the baseball playoffs, even though my team's not in it. You know, the Mets made it to the World Series in 2015, which was amazing. But much more often than not, the Mets are not in it. But it does, just the playoffs are great. And what's also is baseball, Brian, is a lot weirder than it was even 3 years ago. Can you, I mean, the way that these games are played, especially when it comes to pitching, and especially in the playoffs,
it doesn't bear
a resemblance to the game that I grew up watching 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't say that. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I don't know if you read. Let me clarify.
I think it's. I really like the concept of having relievers start games. I'm not a fan of is having 30 pitching changes in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning.
I completely agree with you there. I want the game to move. I don't complain that the baseball games take too long, but I do.
It's pacing.
Complain.
Yeah, it's not length. Pace. Yeah,
exactly. You nailed it. And there's nothing like watching a really crisply pitched and defended baseball game. There's a rhythm to it, you know, to the pitching and to the hitting and all that stuff. That's fantastic. It was interesting. I didn't get to watch all of the games, you know, the wild card games and the tiebreaker games, but I was certainly watching as much as I could and following it. And, you know, just really interesting, the approaches, the A's just throwing doing what they've been doing in a lot of situations, right? You know, completely upending the way games are pitched by opening with the opener. Mm. And, you know, I'm reading Astro Ball right now, which I'm only halfway through, but I cannot recommend enough to people. It's a relatively new baseball book examining basically the Houston Astros and how they put together what they put together. And, I don't necessarily understand the intricacies, but I'm not anti any of the stuff that baseball is doing now that they've done over the last few years as the analytics guys have really completely changed the way the game is played. It's fascinating to me. And what I wonder is it going to stay like this and keep changing, mm-hmm. or is it going to revert to the way that the game's been played, you know, the last 100 plus years? It's just fascinating to watch.
Well, I'm looking forward to, I don't know about this Thursday being one of the best days of the year for sports.
Well, I'm not saying it's better than most days of the year. I'm not saying it's the best, but it's like, this is like top 25, right? I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of big time sports.
Well, I plan, I'm going to Las Vegas next week. In part, I plan these trips to Vegas around sports. So I'm going to be there for beginning with the opening game of the first championship series. And then for every day I'm there, it's basically two games, both AL and NL championship, plus Saturday college football, plus Sunday and Monday NFL. So it's just like
so great. October sports. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. I also love May when you've got baseball, but you've also got the NBA playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs all going every night. That's also really great. There's an amazing rhythm for those 45 days when there's 2-3 playoff games every day.
Another of my favorite times to go to Vegas. That, and then along with March Madness, which also has some NBA games mixed in and baseball having started. So, there's a handful of these times around the year. Keeps me busy. I like it.
So I'm enjoying that. But it's been a really, I'm going to talk a little shop here. It's been an amazing week for Out of the Park Developments and for Franchise Hockey Manager. So this week, Brian, on Tuesday, not one, but both of the games, the PC games that we make at Out of the Park Developments, were on TV. We had Franchise Hockey Manager 5 doing its 2018-19 season predictions on the NHL Network. And we had Out of the Park Baseball doing its 2018 postseason, you know, the playoff predictions on the MLB Network. And that's just really exciting. And it was a lot of work put in by the team. And it's a thrill to see, you know, something that you work on represented in that way. So that was a lot of fun. And if anybody wants to see it, it's on our YouTube page along with everything that we make. So that's cool. And speaking of Franchise Hockey Manager 5, Brian, as this show is released on Friday, October 5th, so is Franchise Hockey Manager 5 available worldwide to everybody. And if you want to buy it on Steam, you get 10% off this week. So that's very exciting. It takes in a tremendous amount of effort to ship a video game and Franchise Hockey Manager 5, an NHL licensed game, all the different people putting it together. There's been a beta going on this week, and tomorrow's the launch. So just super duper exciting. I know it's a little self-serving, but thank you everybody for letting me say it. But I mean, a lot of people have been working on it, and it's what I do. So, and it's sports video games, so I feel like I'm allowed to say it, right?
And then it just gets easy from here, right? Game releases, and then you get like 6 months of vacation, and
just pure vacation, walking on beaches. Yep, exactly.
Beautiful.
So, So that's fun. I've continued to play Pro Evolution. Every time I think I've completely got it, no, not every time, I don't get to go more than 12 or 13 matches without getting reminded that when Pro Evo wants to beat me, it's going to beat me. Mm. I think I got 6 or 7 matches, maybe 4 or 5 left in my Premier League. I haven't been playing as much because I've been exercising almost exclusively at the office. You know, Pro Evo is my treadmill game, but when I'm exercising at the office, I'm watching Portlandia on my iPad. But I did get a couple of reps in. So anyway, I was, you know, I'm not free and clear. I think I'm 6 points ahead of the second place club. So I'm extremely confident I'm going to win it. But I think I'd won like 7 or 8 in a row. And then I lost 4-0 to, you know, I think it was Spurs. You know, it wasn't a team that is, you know, it wasn't Man U or Chelsea or Arsenal. They just, Pro Evo decided, yeah, you're, you know, we're going to get you this time. And it's fine. You know, whenever I think, all right, I'm going to up the difficulty. And I think I am, because I think that's the only way I'm going to, there's so much good stuff out there right now, Brian, so much. It's going to be really difficult for me to keep playing Pro Evolution. You know, it's funny. Kat Bailey tweeted the other day. She's like, you know, I'm just buried in the sports games. It's like, you know, it's too much. And I said to her, I was like, and I replied something along the lines of, I've really enjoyed sort of not playing everything this year, and I'm saving some things for later, which you know, when, you know, 3-4 weeks from now, you know, like I'll probably do a deeper dive into NHL. And I'm definitely going to spend a lot more time in FIFA, but I haven't in those because the sort of recreational video game time, the non-treadmill video game time, Brian, have you heard of this game? I'm not sure. It's called Spider-Man?
Yeah. I have.
Spider-Man is so good.
Yeah, I haven't spent as much time with it as I wanted to, but I would say it's one of those games that comes around every couple of years that kind of jolts me out of a funk. I think it was Insomniac, right?
Yes.
Sunset Overdrive might have been Brian the last game that did that for me. A couple of years ago, which I believe it might be a Game Pass game now if you have subscription.
Oh, yes,
it's a must play. But it gave me that same feeling where I'm like, this is so cool. And my daughter would watch me play, and now I'm not allowed to play without her there. she wants to see the story progress and stuff. She's into it too. So pretty freaking cool game.
I love Spider-Man, and I am not a comic book guy. I am not a superhero guy. I'm not. It's just not my thing. I don't get into them. I don't watch the movies. I don't read the comic books. I don't have a particular affinity for Spider-Man. If I had to say what my favorite, superhero was, it would be Batman, because when I was a little kid, I had a few really cool old Detective Comics with Batman, you know, reprints of the 20s era stuff, which was really influential to a 6, 7, 8 year old me. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't matter. This game is amazing. It's so well done. There's so many fun things to do. The way that they put together New York City is astounding. The freedom you have to go to the top of the World Trade Center, the Empire State Building, and the Brooklyn Bridge, and the story is good, and the visuals are amazing, and the side stuff is terrific. The combat, Brian, I was complaining just last week on the Dogcast. I'm like, man, I just die all the time. I'm not good at action fighting games. You know, God of War, I struggled with. It's not my general genre. And so I'm not sort of schooled in the combat, and I was struggling in the combat. And then I was at one of the Fisk hideouts, and all of a sudden I had a realization that, you know, if I built up my focus bar, like my problem was I was just, you know, dying a lot because I didn't realize that I could refill my health if I get a bunch of combos and then press down.
Right.
I didn't realize that was a thing. And after I realized that, and then I found a really cool power, which is where he spins around and webs like all of the enemies around him. Like that combination has turned me from someone who would get beat up in combat a lot. Now I'm dominating in combat, and it's completely changed the game for me from even that perspective. And I was having a great time before that. And now I'm even enjoying the combat. My goodness, Brian, this game is great.
Hey, everybody, I want to take just a minute and thank our friends from Netgear. This episode is sponsored by Nighthawk Pro Gaming from Netgear, rated 2018's top-performing gaming router by PC Gamer and IGN. You know, there's no question that online gaming demands a stable and low-latency connection. Running multiple connected devices will cause network congestion that most gateways simply can't handle. So switching your existing gateway or router to an XR500 gaming router is the easiest way to improve your online connectivity and online gaming experience with the biggest impact. You know, the XR500 router creates an express lane just for your gaming to give you incredible speed and no lag. It's purpose-built to lower your ping, stabilize your connection, and help you game at incredible speeds. So with this high-performance gaming router, you have complete control of your gaming experience. Keep your game alive with features like geo-filtering, traffic prioritization, and device management. The Nighthawk Pro Gaming Router transforms your gaming experience and gives you the power to win. So don't compete with other online devices for bandwidth. Save the competition for the game. So visit netgear.com/NPG and learn how you can join the no-lag crew today.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I wonder, is there a sports game? I know you've talked a lot about Pro Evolution, but is there a sports game this year that you play that gives you that same feeling? Because it's not there for me this year, even though I think FIFA 19 is really good, and I think NBA 2K is really good. I don't, and maybe it's just because we play these games every single year.
It is.
That it can't, it almost has an inability to surprise you or catch you off guard the way that a game like, I guess, Spider-Man did.
Yeah, it is, and it's nobody's fault. These are very specific video game experiences. You know, the vast majority of everything that you do in an annual sports video game, you're going to do every year because you're playing a sport with rules, and you know, it's supposed to be authentic and realistic. There's only so much room for things to even change. And they've just gotten really big and really good and really focused in different ways on different things, for better and for worse. But yeah, I mean, there's. You were never going to have an FIFA or an NBA 2K or an NBA Live or an NHL or anything just completely or even more than discreetly remake itself in any year. And that brings with it what you said, just sort of a feeling of the same. And that's one of the reasons that I'm waiting and spacing these things out, because I think if I sort of chunk them up, like I'm going to do another couple, 2 or 3 weeks in Pro Evo, try to maybe play a second season and put it out, you know, finally put it on a higher difficulty with my really good team and just see what happens for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, but then I'm going to move on to probably FIFA,
for a month or two to try to see the same thing, see what I can do with Everton. You know, but then, like I said, I'm going to spend time in NHL. Forza Horizon, I haven't even mentioned. I'm going to hit the download button on that and play that. And that could also, you know, it's not a sports video game, but obviously racing games are a big thing here on Press Row. In fact, at the end of this segment, we have our good friend Greg Seward talking all about NASCAR Heat 3. So stay tuned for that. So, man, I think if anything, Forza Horizon 4 has a chance. But I also have a, you know, I from what little, and I have not looked at or read much, what I'm hearing about Forza Horizon 4 is, boy, this is very samey, even though it's supposedly great. And I have no doubt that it's great because Forza Horizon and Forza are all great, as I've said a million times. But I can even see, like, when you talk about sort of the same thing, I, you know, if people are also, sounds like they're saying the same kind of thing a little bit about that. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I'm obviously going to play it and have fun with it. I hope they actually simplify it a little bit in Forza Horizon 4. You know, but that could be one that could, you know, that could really grab me in a different way than just your annual, you know, sports game release.
Well, I think we should also discuss your, you, as you mentioned, that you're waiting or spreading them out. Is there, unless you are incredibly enthused for a specific sports game, you should wait a few weeks, wait a month, wait until Black Friday, because the prices on these games drop quickly. Most of them drop quickly. We already had NBA Live go from 60 to 24, and the NBA season is still 2 weeks away. It's crazy, and most of the other games you'll find within a month a deal that takes it down to 40 or something. So, I mean, there's no reason to rush into it. Most of these sports, with the exception of Madden, they're long seasons. So if you can hold off, it's probably a smart idea to do so, especially if you got something like EA Access in the wings where you know you're going to be getting the game eventually. And if you're not crazy about it at launch and you can hold off, not a bad way to go about it.
Not at all. And, you know, you said it, if you're an Xbox person with EA Access, you don't even have to think about it until you put in 10 hours for all the all the EA games. And that really has changed the equation for me, Brian. Like, it really has. Like, I've not had to even make a purchase decision about NBA Live the last few years because I had it on EA Access and I didn't get close to 10 hours. And that just changes things, right? Like, and I'm not the only one. And it's not just about NBA Live. You know, NHL, I don't think I think I got my 10 hours in. I do have the full NHL game, but I guarantee you I got it on some sort of sale or discount because just like this year, it's sort of getting pushed down the line a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always find deals in video games if you wait. You can always do it. Although, you know, it depends on what you want to do. Like, if you're an Ultimate Team player, you want to probably get in on day one. Right?
All right. So I know we wanted to talk a little bit about reviews, Rich, because one of the things I posted on Twitter recently, I got a decent amount of discussion, was I was curious going back the last 5 years, because I think that's the most relevant period for these series right now, what the Metacritic scores look like, kind of how the games were trending and all that. And I posted a graph with the corresponding scores, and I discovered a few interesting things from this experiment. The first is that according to reviewers, aggregate score, of course, all these games are basically the same now. Do you agree? Quality wise, with the exception of NBA Live, all the games land between 80 and 84. Does that mean they're the same quality, or does that mean that as from a review standpoint, the way these annual games are reviewed leaves little room to fluctuate?
Well, look, I think it says that for sure. You know, it's a struggle I had, and I don't know how. I mean, I wrote the Madden review every year for what, 4, 5, 6, 7 years? I don't even know a Games Radar. There's a bunch of them. Same thing with NBA 2K, NBA Live, certainly some FIFAs. You know, Games Radar was great to me. 10 years I wrote a bunch of reviews for them. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. By the time I stopped doing it, when I started with Out of the Park, I didn't even know what I was going to say or score it anymore because of what we said. And it's not a criticism of the games. It's just like the games don't jump in significant quality every year, or certainly not enough to where it would impact enough people.
Yeah. They only do, Rich, if they screwed something up the year before. Which is why NHL went from a 60 to the 83 or 84 it's at right now.
Right. And it also shows, and again, I'm not trying to say this in a snarky way, that, you know, the people who are doing the reviews have kind of given up, right? Because what are you going to do? Right? I mean, if every game is a 7 or an 8, then I'm not even sure what the point is. And I haven't really paid a whole lot of attention to reviews the last few years, other than you know listening to what you have to say, and Kat Bailey has to say, and you know, Owen and Smith, you know, the guys on from the show. So I also think that overall reviews are dramatically less influential than they used to be. I think the people that they put on these reviews, especially in the sports game world, are not going to be people like from 5, 10, well, more like 10 or 15 years ago, where you had a lot of people like, you know, there's the people I mentioned, along with obviously Matt Cato. You know, there's good people out there doing sports video game reviews, but there's not nearly as many people.
There are ones on there where you don't recognize the publication, or you read it and you don't know what world they're living in or what background they're coming from, because it doesn't really compute. Because I'll do, you know, here and there, this was a down year for this series, or this is an achievement for this series, and then you can find the opposite opinion every time.
That's right.
Which is why if you go to a 9 or you go to a 7, it always ends up in the 80, low 80s, because that's all people are doing. The thing that I've heard a lot is like, oh, reviewers don't hold, you know, Madden accountable, or EA accountable for Madden every year, or this year, or whatever it may be. The problem is that Madden, for example, we'll just use Madden because I think it's the one people talk about most in this respect, is always a decent game. Like, you can say you don't like it. You can say it's a disappointment for you.
It turns on. It works. It plays. It's got the uniforms, the stadiums, you know, schedules.
There is no year where Madden's going to be a 5. There's probably also no year where Madden's going to be a 10.
Nope.
So you look at the chart again, Madden, along with MLB The Show and FIFA, almost a flat line, right? Because there's just not going to be a fluctuation year to year on those games, because they've already established themselves as something, and they're not going to change very much from that. Because well, for whatever reasons it may be, they're conservative, or you know, or the leagues have a certain amount of control, or they don't have the resources to do something. You know, you hear all those things.
But here's the other thing:
mm-hmm.
is the game that's being scored and reviewed in Metacritic is not the game you're playing 3 months after release. And that's not the same as the game 6 months after release or 9 months after release. The real absurdity with sports video game reviews is that it's such a snapshot in time. And we see every single year issues of influence and new things and old things that are
get
significantly changed over the course of a year.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat projected already at release. So at least from my perspective, I do that. I project a bit. I look at Madden this year and I said, number one, like, let's say franchise mode. They did some good stuff in franchise mode, so I think the game's going to have more longevity than the previous edition. You know, that's something I specifically said. So that's one way to look at it. Another is that EA has a track record of excellent post-release support with Madden. So you also consider that in, or at least I do. I have to, you know, I again, as we talk about reviewers looking at things differently, I have a background of covering these games for 15 plus years, not necessarily always comprehensively reviewing them, but
a lot I know of that.
I know what to expect. I know the way these games are going to go post-release. You know, like you know NBA 2K is going to mess around with gameplay and probably irritate some people with that. You know Madden is going to add some features. It's one of the few series that add features through patches after release. You know people are going to be disappointed by NHL's roster updates. You know these things, they don't really change, right? Mm. So I do project a little bit. And also you have to kind of clear out the noise. It's funny because right before we started the show, Rich, I was looking at updated Metacritic scores. I wanted to see the user scores.
Mm-hmm.
NBA 2K and FIFA are both down at like 2.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's because NBA 2K, it's because of the microtransactions primarily. With FIFA, I'm not really sure. FIFA's one that I have a little tougher time judging what the community thinks of it because it's such an international game. And there's so many different ways to approach it. I think FIFA's excellent this year. I think NBA 2K is excellent this year.
I agree.
But people like to hate on them. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. It's kind of taking experience with the games and plotting that in. And I just thought it was interesting that almost every game now, with the exception of NBA Live, every annual game, all is within this 80 to 84 range. And I don't think they're that close. I don't think NBA 2K should be within like 2 points of MLB The Show or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we invented the right way to keep track of this, Brian, when we invented the sports video game power rankings. Right?
Yes, and, we should do that again soon
because that's the real answer.
Yeah.
The answer is not Metacritic. It's actually stacking them up against each other one by one. And that's the answer. And it'll be really interesting at the end of the year to see where we collectively come in on that and where the community comes in on that. Because you can see legitimate cases made for four games. Madden, FIFA, NBA 2K, yeah. And, you know, at the least show. Those three, and you could certainly, you know, uh-huh. I wouldn't fight you if you said The Show, wouldn't fight you if you said NHL, right? So there's, and of course me, Pro Evil is going to be in mine, and nobody else is going to do that, right? So it'll be really interesting because that, again, you know, Metacritic isn't built for sports video games against each other because, you know, the people writing these days about it have proven that because I don't want to say it's meaningless because it's not. It means a lot, but it's strangely juxtaposed with the rest of the games. You know, the best video games that aren't sports video games get 90 pluses, you know, like, I don't even go to Metacritic much anymore, but like, I don't know what Spider-Man is, but I'm sure it's 92 or 93. I think God of War is probably 95.
Forza Horizon 4 is in the 90s.
Okay. So, you know, rarely will there be, that sort of difference between what a Spider-Man or a, God of War versus, you know, I don't know what, you know, what was sort of a big game. Well, you know, what it'll be versus like a Call of Duty.
Spider-Man, Rich, 87.
Really? Yeah. I'm surprised it's not in the 90s. I'm very surprised that's not in the 90s. So that means that to me, right, if you sort of look at it from that way, is that Spider-Man is as good as NBA 2K, which maybe it is. And in a lot of ways, I mean, I've played some NBA 2K and it's ridiculously good. What I played, I have been very happy with everything I played in NBA 2K. And I was yelling at Pete last week to just go get NBA 2K. He loves the NBA and like he's holding out for a sale. I mean, just get the game. it's so good. But I mean, Spider-Man versus NBA 2K. If you're going to have that ridiculous discussion, right? It's not really the same. It's almost not a fair fight. Because Spider-Man is the culmination of probably what a 5-year development cycle, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, with an opportunity to do something. Now, granted, Spider-Man,
the template of that game is wildly similar to others. The fact that it's funny, there was another Spider-Man game that was on the PS3 or maybe the PS4 right around launch, that was very similar to it in structure. This Spider-Man is much more impressive as overall game. It is sort of like, you know, the way that it's structured on how you do things. So yeah, it's just Metacritic is a weird, strange thing.
Yeah, so I hit a little bit of a wall this year because of that, Rich. When I went to do the reviews, I was bored before I started doing it. Because I looked and I said, if I do this Pro Evolution Soccer review, I'm going to say the same things I said last year. Like, almost exactly the same things I said last year. Same with FIFA. NBA 2K had some new stuff, though. NBA Live, not really. It was basically the same overall assessment. So I doubled them up because these are the only two sports where you have, only two, you know, big sports where have competition. Cool. And I'm writing to a different audience at Sporting News, which is kind of sports fans who play video games as opposed to like sports video gamers, right? A little bit of a difference. So that's just kind of how I went at it this year to try and give myself something different. Cause I almost just sat down and said, it's not worth it this year. Cause I knew going in, you can almost know again, because of history, you can almost know, well, I know what I'm going to play anyway. I know what's in there. I know everything that's in there. And then it's just a matter of, do I find something wrong with it? Or how is the balancing here? But you look at Pro Evolution Soccer, you're like, really good game, lacks a lot of licenses, lacks imagination and feature set. I mean, that's every year.
The more you play it, the more you love the gameplay. Sure. And you hate the experience.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, FIFA, it's the same thing.
Yeah. FIFA, great presentation, you know, fun gameplay, career mode lacking, you know, but it's got a ton of stuff, including an excellent story mode too. But you know, on the pitch, it's arguably equal to, or maybe inferior to Pro Evolution Soccer. It's like the same thing. Almost.
I would have no idea what to write if I were still doing sports video game reviews.
Yeah, I think you have to start from a different point every year as far as how do I want, you know, what kind of story do I want to tell with a review?
Oh my gosh. It was exhausting. Yeah. It was just to try to come up with an angle, because nobody wants to read Madden is very good this year. Its new features include schematic blocking and fortuitous linebacking.
New animation system.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, that means nothing and nobody cares. Like it's so hard to come up with an interesting way. And by the way, that's another reason I don't read most people's reviews, because they're not interesting, because it's hard to do it. And you got to be Cat Bailey or Owen Good or Matt Cato. Like, you got to be one of those real pros to be able to do that. Yeah. And that's really, really tough to do.
NBA 2K.
I'm not good enough. Like, I'm not as good. Not in the same.
I look at the list, and you could say the same about NBA 2K, because every year you say, this game has more than any other sports game, but they tend to do the more innovative stuff. Like, what that used to be easy to write reviews because it was a lot of innovation. It's just not really there anymore. It's more about padding out what's already in the game. Well, it's more about expanding ways to generate revenue. I mean, that's like, if you look at NBA 2K's reviews, or the stories, if you actually, let's talk more about less about reviews, more about the stories. If you see on media sites again this year, it's NBA 2K's microtransactions and advertisements are out of control on Deadspin and Kotaku and wherever you want to look that generally doesn't cover sports games. That's what they're talking about, right? So so that's like referenced in a lot of reviews, but man, it can't. That just one thing like that doesn't weigh down everything, and so you have to account for that. It's very difficult also to score when you're accounting for something that seems to ruin the game for a lot of people. But then, in your case, Rich, doesn't even affect you.
No, but I have it. There is innovation. It's just innovating within the constraints of a game. NBA 2K innovates wildly. Dude, the I have played a couple of hours.
Well, that's what I said. They're the only one that does it now.
Of the MyGM mode. Right. Okay. I slightly misunderstood. I played a couple hours of the MyGM mode, the, you know, very text heavy thing. But
oh,
like,
Lord. No, that's an understatement.
Those, it is an understatement.
It's like I'm reading lots for like 10 minutes having to press the button every time. Oh, my God.
Lots of text. But if you actually read it, it is so over the top and
ridiculous. Yes.
For it's so ridiculous. And this is a licensed game.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, I talked about it last week with this.
Nobody had to approve that. Nobody had to approve it, Rich, because nobody's reading all that.
Nobody wouldn't know when he got through it.
Nobody in the league, NBA, is actually reading through all that.
You know, and I'm sorry, the my guy mode, whatever, you know. Whatever mode where you go through the prelude, you know, and then the season after you pick your team. That is innovative. That is really innovative. I know people love to hate on it, and friends of this show disagree with me, and friends of the show agree with me. But the this year's my player, that first year prelude, not the demo prelude, but once you get into it, there's some really good stuff in there that I thought was innovative, like the cool scene where the end of the bench guy sort of explains life in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in a really interesting filmed or not filmed, but you know, put together sequence with music and how it was done and stuff like that. Just I find there to be, again, NBA 2K is heavy on the innovate, super heavy on the innovation. They're the ones who are really doing it, and it's not the VC discussion. But it's to come up with things that work, that are innovative within the constraints of the rules and structure of the sports video games is one of the biggest challenges anybody faces, I think.
All right, Rich. I think that'll do it for this portion of the podcast. We're going to have a segment here with you chatting with Greg Stewart.
Yes.
Correct? What do you have to look forward to there?
NASCAR Heat 3. He's the official correspondent of the show, along with, of course, our good friends Dr. Ken and Senior NASCAR. Who
you're gonna have? Will try to. You're gonna have another racing show coming up.
We are
racing
we are.
Game of the year, or what are we looking at?
Yeah, we're definitely gonna have that. Yeah. No doubt. We might even have sort of one. We're definitely gonna have that. There's gonna be a couple more discussions, like what we're gonna have at the end of this show on individual games too. So this is a great year for racing games, and I'm glad that we've got such good, you know, racing game fans, who will come on. Cause a lot of people tell me they get a big kick out of that show cause it's slightly, left field from our normal thing, but it still fits well within it. So yeah, we're definitely going to do that. That's gonna be a lot of fun, and we'll obviously cover Forza Horizon probably on an individual segment. Then we'll do a big Forza, NASCAR Heat, Formula One. Like, it'll be really interesting. Horizon 4 versus Formula One.
Yeah, it's very different. For like very Stewart. Different type of games. Yeah.
Very different games. It'll be really interesting because, you know, F1's kind of, you know, it's won their, you know,
it's the darling.
Game of the year, a couple, two, 3 years in a row. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Rich Grisham. You will be continuing on. I'm out of here. But for everyone else, hang around. And we'll be back next week also.
Let's do it.
All right. Take care, everyone, and enjoy this next segment.
Well, hey, everybody. I am so happy because, once again, we have the official racing game correspondent for the Press Row podcast, my friend and the co-host of the best show on the internet, the Player One Podcast, Mr. Greg Stewart. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks. I didn't know I was the official correspondent.
Absolutely, yes.
I got to talk to my agent. I didn't even know that I was being paid for this.
Yeah. Well, I think our lawyers are going to have conversations with your accountants about that. So, you know, maybe we'll just take that offline. But yes, you are officially, it's official. Thank you, Greg. It's great to have you back on. We are here to talk about in the second game of our series. This one is NASCAR Heat 3. Coming out in the middle of what is, you know, an annual tradition, which is just way too many great games coming out. But this year in particular just feels strong.
Isn't it crazy? This year in particular is nuts.
It really is. And it really is. We could do, and I would love to talk about that. But let's get down to business. NASCAR Heat 3, Greg Stewart. Mm-hmm. What is the deal? You know this series. You know this development team. You know, so this is your wheelhouse of wheelhouse games. Am I right?
Yeah. Although I will be honest, I've slowly not started stepping away from NASCAR, but I'm not as into it as I once was.
You and many other people these days.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And we'll probably talk about that a fair bit, actually. But yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up around short track racing. I grew up around asphalt racing. It's a big part of my life for the first half of my life. So yeah, I mean, this is, you know, something that's been near and dear to my heart for 40 years. So yeah, it's definitely in my wheelhouse.
So there was NASCAR Heat 2 last year. This is the third year in a row since they sort of rebooted the franchise. Do I have that right?
Yes.
So yep. Give us the breakdown. What do you like? What concerns you? What's the deal?
So for me, the big thing this year that I was really excited about, and I've talked about this before, but this is actually the fourth game since 704 Games grabbed the license, which 704 is not what they were called when they grabbed the license. They were originally called Dusenberry Martin Racing. They've since changed the name to 704, which for a reason which I hope is true. I've heard this and I think it's believable and it's awesome if it's true, but they're based in North Carolina, and Dusenberry Martin Racing sounds like the name of a racing team, which is obviously why they chose it. And apparently they were having trouble with people who were visiting North Carolina, race fans who were trying to book team garage tours because they thought it was actually a racing team. So they would, you know, because most of the NASCAR
that's
teams
fantastic.
Are based in North Carolina.
Sure,
and you can
absolutely.
Go tour
that's
their facilities,
the heart.
Right?
Yeah, that's yeah, the heart so, and the museum. And
so
the,
apparently, yeah, so apparently that's why they changed their name, which I love. but yeah, the first year that they did this, which was NASCAR Heat Evolution, I think, was just a – no, I'm sorry. It was NASCAR 15, which was just a sort of an update to the previous Activision game, which was terrible. And then they moved into the NASCAR Heat Evolution series, and this is the third in that series. And, of course, NASCAR Heat is playing off the Infogrames series from the early 2000s that was so well-loved.
Where does Dirt to Daytona fall in the lineage? Because I have a feeling this is part of that that family tree, so to speak, right?
It is, yeah. Dirt to Daytona, if I have this right, was actually part of the NASCAR Heat series from way back. I don't think it was officially called Heat.
No, but you know, it's funny. Yeah. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. I'll, I'll let you go. But when I love Dirt to Daytona, one of my all-time favorite racing games. I can't say top five anymore because there's been so many great racing games in the last few years, but an all-time list. But anyway, there were times when you're playing that game when the in-game graphics said like NASCAR Thunder or NASCAR Heat. You know, like they clearly didn't get – like the name change must have been last minute because there was a different – games, you know, like NASCAR Heat 2 or 3 or whatever it was, different games graphics popping up at different times in the game, which I didn't quite grasp at the time what it exactly meant, but makes sense.
It's interesting that you brought that up though, because NASCAR or Dirt to Daytona was again, there was another series running parallel, which was the EA series. This was back when, hey, official sports licenses could be in two or more games. and that's what it was, is Atari, which was Infogrames, had a license that they had gotten when they bought Hasbro games. Hasbro originally had the NASCAR Heat games. And of course, Electronic Arts was doing NASCAR games. So you had the NASCAR Thunder series. So just like every other, in my opinion, just like any other sports series where you have two competing companies on the same license, there was a real flurry of upgrades throughout the years. And one of the things that both of those groups were doing was really getting into career modes. And of course, you know, there are three major NASCAR series. There's the Craftsman Truck series. There's what's called now the Xfinity series, but what was called the Busch series back then. And of course, the Monster Energy series, which is the big boys. They were the Sprint Cup and the Nextel Cup and the Winston Cup. And, you know, the sponsors have changed through the years, but they're what people think of when you think NASCAR. So they had career modes and you could, you know, start in the truck series and all the work your way up. But what both of these companies have started to do was actually say, like, we want to go back more to our roots, actually closer to the type of thing that I grew up with, which is, you know, you've got one car, you're working out of a garage, you're going to local tracks, you're worried about if you have the money to actually get to that track, and, you know, you're living dollar to dollar, basically, and say, okay, what, wouldn't it be cool if you started your career there instead of in one of the top three series in the NASCAR family? So Dirt to Daytona, that was Atari and Monster Games' take on it, which Monster Games is actually the developer of NASCAR Heat now. And they started you, excuse me, on dirt tracks with what are called street stocks. So basically the idea is they were real road cars that you would take, you would gut, you would add roll cages to, and paint them up and go out and race them. So you were on local tracks, tiny little quarter mile, half mile dirt tracks. And this NASCAR Heat 3 more or less feels like it's supposed to be a spiritual successor to Dirt to Daytona.
Well, now that changes everything, Greg, because as I said, Dirt to Daytona is in an all-time racing game with me, mm-hmm. and I have never been a big racing, like NASCAR guy. I'm aware of it, but I don't sit around and watch the races. So that you saying that has me all over this.
Yeah, and so that's the other thing that hasn't been in the previous Heat game. Well, they've had career modes in the last year they had a career mode that was not great. This year in Heat 3, they've added in a better career mode where you actually own the team and you buy the sorry, I thought I heard someone speaking. You own the team and you buy the chassis and you upgrade your cars and you hire team members who have various abilities that when you apply them to your vehicles, they're you know, better in aerodynamics, higher speed, all that sort of thing. You paint up your livery, you name your team, you pick your number, you sign sponsors. They brought all that back, which is really from the heyday of the NASCAR series in the early 2000s with Thunder and Heat or Dirt to Daytona, whichever one you want to call it. So that's what I was excited for in this version. And that's what you get. And of course they've gone to the sort of local tracks. Now in this game, you start in, I think they're called super modifieds. They're these really crazy off kilter dirt racing stock cars that when you see them, they don't look right. They're lowered on the right side. They have suspension that's so stiff on the left side that the left rear tire looks like it's falling right out of the car. They're really cool looking. Like, they're just so bizarre. And when you see them racing, the whole idea of they're built, so the whole idea is that they don't turn through a turn. They slide through the turn, right? You're always on opposite lock on these things, getting them around the track. That's the base series that you start with. So it's a little bit different than it was in Dirt to Daytona, where you're starting with this base dirt racing series as well. But these are kind of much more... In the echelon of dirt racing cars, they're pretty high up the ladder. So they've kind of doubled down on the dirt racing this year. So the way this comes from, I'm going to back up again, is and I'm going to go sort of way back. So we were talking earlier. You made a mention earlier about how when I said that I've kind of started to not watch as much NASCAR, you said that's the same for a lot of people. And you're absolutely right. That's been a problem for a lot of sports in the United States and all over the world, but United States, where, you know, the numbers are dropping off. NASCAR at one point was the fastest growing sport in the U.S. I think it was second only to football for quite a while, both on television and in attendance. Now it's fallen off a lot in the past 15 years. Dale Earnhardt affected it, but a lot of other things have affected it. The show is not quite as good. Different management, you know, Brian France has been running it for a long time. Apparently now he won't be because he ran into some legal issues recently. But what they've done to fix that problem, they've tried a bunch of different things and a lot of them are gimmicks. Actually this weekend, as we're recording, we're about to have the Charlotte Roval race, which is basically the 1.5 mile track at Charlotte, North Carolina. They have an infield road course, and this season is the first time that NASCAR is actually going to run that road course. Glad to hear it because NASCAR needs to go to more road courses, but it's pretty gimmicky. So one of the gimmicks that they introduced years ago, in 2013, I think, is they took the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series to Eldora Speedway, which is a famous dirt track. And I believe Tony Stewart, who's a previous NASCAR champion, I think he owns it. I think this was right after he bought it, actually. And so they added a dirt race to the truck series, the only dirt race in the top three series. The trucks go there once a year. And it's a blast. It's an amazing show. It's completely different. It's something new and fresh. And it sort of mixes things up really nicely. And they changed the way the qualifying works and everything like that. It's not just a bunch of cars going out and running fast laps. They actually run heat races, which, again, as someone who grew up with local short tracks,
oh, wow.
I love that. That's how, to me, that's how you should be racing. 704 added the Eldora race to last year's game, and it was a huge hit. It got them tons of press. It was very well received. And so they kind of doubled down on dirt racing in general this year. So they added in this career mode, which is great, but they force you to start in the dirt series, where if you're a fan of that, this game is for you. I'm not, personally. I think they've done a good job, but I'm not a big fan. Unfortunately, they've locked all of their career mode, all of the stuff that I was interested in career mode, which is actually buying and running your own team, behind getting through one or two seasons of dirt racing.
That's what, 5-10 hours?
It's a lot. Yeah. It depends on how you play. You know, if you want to set your races to really short, it's not that long, but it's a couple dozen of events.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And then of course,
is a lot.
Yeah. And then of course, once you get into your career, you're owning a team proper, you know, you're starting from zero. So you're still not very good. And so you're going to spend a lot of time, if you're playing at a higher difficulty level, you're going to spend a lot of time running around near the back of a dirt race for two or three seasons again. So it kind of really took the shine off of what I was excited about this year. Now, that being said, when I got into owning a team, I do like what I'm seeing for the most part. Like I said, you've got a garage. I think it's a six. You have room for six different chassis. And you buy, just like in real life, you buy chassis that, you know, this one's for short tracks, this one's for bigger tracks, this one's for road courses. Very, very realistic. I don't know if it's realistic at that level, but it is a realistic thing. And then you hire different team members that are good at, I think, three different categories: aero, engine, and suspension. And you assign them to work on a car for the week before a race. And then you go to your race and you get your money and you sell your merchandise. And so what's there is good for sort of a first crack at a new career mode. I really like what I'm seeing. It takes way too long to get to it. And if you're not into dirt racing, you're kind of stuck doing something you don't like for a long time. And you know, I mean, it sounds kind of wishy-washy in a way, but really, I mean, NASCAR, the top three series of NASCAR are asphalt series. And so I can't race asphalt for like three or four seasons in career mode. And it kind of bums me out. That's, you know, it's too bad.
Yeah.
It's too bad that they locked it behind. There's a weird gate on it, which I don't like. I would rather see, like, if I want to, I want to just jump into owning a Monster Energy Series team, right? Or I'll just start at the Truck Series or whatever. But you don't really get that option. You have to unlock the things that you like, which I've never been a fan of. And my experience in game development has always sort of, I've always been taught, don't hide your best stuff behind some sort of
sure.
game.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Well, that's a shame.
It is. But that being said, the game plays really well, and the dirt racing is good.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
And people who like it really, really like it. I think they've made great strides this year in NASCAR Heat 3. They fixed a lot of the problems that I had. They fixed there used to be a major AI difficulty issue where, and I can't remember if this was last year or the season before, because I honestly did not spend a lot of time last year playing this game, where they had what they were basically calling adaptive AI. But what that translated into was it seemed like the highest position you could reach was predetermined at the beginning of the race. So if you were running 30th and the game sort of predetermined that the best the car that you're in can do is probably, say, 22nd, you get to that point and it would be you could race your way to that position, and then it would be noticeable that everyone around you sped up.
Wow.
So that it was, you know, like you would catch the 21st place car at an alarming rate, but then once you got close enough, suddenly they were just as fast as you.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it was a pain in the butt, and they've fixed that. If anything, I think their AI is a little too easy, because I find even setting it like 95 or 96, you're still by far the fastest car on the track. So
I like that as and again, I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong,
yeah,
but as somebody who I like that, because, you know, I feel like with the Forza series, for example, which, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to do a whole show about Forza Horizon
next week. That's when the game comes out.
Right.
I don't know when
we're, so. Well, this is actually going out a week from today. So you'll be playing
last week.
Yeah. You'll be playing it. And as when this show hits, and then we'll talk about it maybe the week after or two, whenever it's good for you. But anyway, mm-hmm. I digress. Like, I'm better than I feel like I should be in Forza. Like, I get in the main Forza games. Like, I sort of bump it up a little bit and only put, you know, I put the you know, road arrows or whatever that's called, the mm-hmm. line, you know, only on turns and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think I'm that good at it, but maybe I just am. But regardless, like, I like being able to win. I can't be stupid and win, but if I'm like smart and
sure.
and relatively, and of course, the rewind feature is used liberally by me. So anyway, that's a long rambling way of me saying I am happy to hear that the AI leans towards a little easier, because I want to be able to, unlike you in F1, where you're excited about coming in 22nd because that's where you're supposed to finish. I'm not. You know, I don't have to win every race, but I like being a chance without having to be an expert at the game.
Yeah, I get it. I don't think that's a bad thing in this game. I call it out just because, for me, that's always the struggle, is that I know what I like to get out of the difficulty level in a racing game, and I always find the presets don't actually, in any game, don't actually cover it. Like, I have to fiddle with it, so I'll play the same few races like 6 or 7 times until I find a difficulty that I like, and then I'll go on. But it's not a knock on the game. Every racing game is like that for me. What I will say is that, yeah, so the racing has gotten better. The AI feels a lot better. They don't do the AI cars would do these strange brake checks down straightaways and things like that, where they would just slow down for no reason, which was a real real problem on the super speedways, because the whole idea is that you want to be drafting on the super speedway, and then suddenly the car in front of you just slow down and you just slam into it. I don't see that happening anymore. I see them trying to save the cars when they spin, and, you know, it seems like the wrecks feel a little more realistic now. There's still some wonkiness there. So overall, it feels better. I also see before, in previous games, their pit road AI was absolutely atrocious, where all the cars would stick to a weird – they would stick to a weird pit schedule where, again, say it's a 20-lap race, and fuel and tires dictate that you need to pit on lap 15. But say there was a caution on lap 13, you know, logic would say, okay, well, if I pit now, I'll have enough fuel to get to the end, so I should do that because this is caution. I won't lose a lot of positions. And you pit and come back out only to realize that none of the AI had pitted, because they're supposed to pit on lap 15, and there's no question that that's what they're going to do. So then you get under green, you'd be running 40th, and suddenly the entire field would pit while you're racing around in green. Like, things like that would happen before that I don't see happening as much now, which I'm really happy about. They feel more real. They've made great strides in that.
Good. Real good.
However, my big thing with this series now, and it's still growing pains, and I have to keep reminding myself that this is only the third series. And I think, Rich, you know that. I mean, I'm sure you talk about it on your show a lot. You know, the criticism that's leveled, and I really hate this when I see it on Twitter and things like that, where people will say, like, a new Madden comes out, and they'll find something that has been wrong with Madden for a long time. You know, there's something that just hasn't been fixed. Whether or not that should be fixed is debatable. You can figure that out. But the thing I always hate is that, like, well, I don't understand what they're doing. They're releasing the same game every single year. How hard could it be to fix these things? Right? And I know, and I think you know, and probably a lot of your listeners understand that even yearly updates to sports games, there's a lot of work that goes into these, and not every feature can be fixed, and not everything can be changed. And you really, you know, you only have that probably 10-month cycle.
Yep.
And you just can't get to everything. So,
and extremely finite resources, people, and
exactly.
Technology. Like, none. There are relatively, shockingly few human beings who actually produce these kind of games, right?
Right.
Like most, you know, we're not talking about massive, you know, Tiburon, you know, down in Orlando making Madden things. I would guess, I don't know, what are there, 25 people maybe that made this game?
I don't really know, but I think it's suffice to say that we're not talking Tiburon. We're not talking
right.
a company with the resources of an Electronic Arts.
Right. There's probably one or two guys for most right. of the disciplines to put this game together.
Right. Like, there's definitely not hundreds of people working on this game. So you know, and that's not to give the things that I don't like a pass.
Nope.
That's just to say, you know, I get it. Right. I understand. And I'm happy with what they've done so far. They're in their third year. They've made noticeable improvements every year. And I'm super happy about that. The thing that I think they need to do next, two things I'd love to see in next year's game. One, I love the career mode. Don't lock it behind a couple of seasons of dirt racing. And also, in the career mode, don't make me race dirt. I get it. Jeff Gordon came from dirt. Tony Stewart came from dirt racing. They're two superstars. Kyle Larson, who's a current star, he came from dirt racing. It's sort of a sexy thing to be into for a NASCAR game. Keep it. Give me the option to start on next year. Add in like asphalt short tracks. Give me that option. Let me start running on asphalt as well, because a lot of the drivers came from there and it fits with the game. That option I think would be great.
Nice.
The other thing though, in general, that really needs to happen in these games is they need to, if they can, they need to hire a UX specialist. And what I mean by that is that there are just little things throughout the game that it's a level of polish and a level of user UI and user interactivity and user experience that something like a Madden, which has been going for 20 years, has. Where things like when if I go to a track and I get out there and I like do some practicing and I realize, wow, I'm really not good at this. I really need to fix, like, to add stability, turn on stability control or something like that. You can't do it when you're there in those sessions. You're kind of locked into an interface at that point when you're in an event, excuse me, and you can't change anything. So you're kind of stuck there. Little things like when you go out and practice, like, when you get to a race, you have a practice session, a qualifying session, and the race. When you go out and practice, you've got UI on the screen that tells you this is your current lap time. This is your fastest lap time. That's it. And then when you finish practice, you get a list of your lap times. Like when you say, okay, I've practiced enough, I'm good. Get a list of your lap times. Like, those look good. Sure, why not? Nowhere that I have found in practice can you compare your lap times to anybody else who's running. So you'll go out to qualify thinking, I've got this track clocked, to realize you're 2 seconds off the pace.
Wow.
And you don't find out until it's too late.
Mm.
And so, then it's like, well, now I know I'm slow. I can't fiddle with the settings at this point. Like, I can't fiddle even with the car set. I mean, I can play with the car setup, but I don't know how to fix it and I can't test it.
Mm.
Like, the next option I have is to go race.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
So it's stuff like that,
okay.
And it's sort of all over the game. Things like the dirt track cars only have two gears. They have first and second, and that's it. But if you go into the setup screen, it's the standard setup screen for the rest of the game, which is four gears, so you can actually change the gear ratio for all four gears. How is that affecting the car? I have no idea. Little things like that. Like, there's just – it's all that sort of thing's all over the place.
Gotcha.
That's what they desperately need to add – next year, I think, is they're getting the racing down. They can tweak the AI, which they're always going to have to do. They'll never be finished tweaking the AI.
Right, right.
But they've got to polish this up. And things like when I'm out there racing, I don't want to make the pick calls. I want my crew chief to tell me what I should do. I want somebody to tell me, like, do I have enough fuel? Not when I'm about to run out of fuel. Tell me, you know, I have 5 laps left, or, you know, there's a different strategy we need to use. Like, if you pit now, you can make it, or your tires are really wearing on the right side. Like, things that an F1, again, that's had a lot of years to bake, it does, right? You were supposed to pit on this lap, but F1 will tell you, like, based on your tire wear, they'll say, we have a different strategy option. Here's what you should do. And you get to choose that.
In F1? Because
It's been a few years now.
Because that was my biggest frustration is in F1 with pitting and stuff, is I had no idea when I was supposed to do it because it didn't tell me. Or,
well, then NASCAR would be even worse for you.
Oh, boy.
Because that's the thing. Like, a yellow comes out, and it just says, do you want to pit? I don't know. Should I? Can I get some advice here? Like, in no universe does the driver make that call. Now, the driver can make that call. The driver can say, no, I want to pit now.
Why don't you just tell me if I should pit?
People in their ear. Exactly. Why don't you just tell me what movie you'd like to see? But they've got people in their ear telling them, like, you should pit now. Or if the guy in front of you doesn't pit, you should be like things like that.
Yeah.
Or little things like, because for some reason they don't allow you to control your car while you're pitting or during yellows, it's literally a menu and then suddenly you're back in line and you're racing, which speeds up the experience. I get it. It seems like if you're in I was racing a race tonight, actually just before I was trying out the Roval, just before we recorded. And I caused a wreck in a chicane on the backstretch. Took out me and Denny Hamlin, number 11.
It's called Grisham.
Yeah. We're running second and third. The caution immediately comes out, which freezes the field. And then the menu comes up to say, do you want to pit or not? And I say, no, I don't want to pit. So now we're coming out of turn 4, getting ready for the restart. And Denny and I are sitting in third and fourth, which is where we were when we wrecked. But realistically, had the game kept running, we would be down in like 38th and 39th.
Ah.
So again, just little things like that, that I would love to see them tweak and fix. They haven't quite got the racing experience right yet. I know they'll get there. I'm happy with this year's version. It's a definite step up from last year. It's a much bigger leap from 2 to 3 than it was from 1 to 2. And that gives me a lot of hope for NASCAR Heat 4. Because again, I know the people that are making these games and they're passionate about the sport. And I know the things that are wrong in there aren't because they don't know better.
Mm.
It's just because, they prioritize the other things to make it a better experience there. So I get it. I want them to start. I want them to start looking at the little things.
Could they do this just as an online service?
I would think.
I would. To me, this seems like an interesting option. Now, obviously, I don't know, you know, how unit sales are, what their licensing costs are, what the development costs are. I don't know if these are profitable. I don't know if they're underwater. Who knows, right? But I'm just thinking, like, for games that like this that are more based on individual teams and players and, NASCAR, there's a season. But even golf, there's a season. Like, I've always thought that sort of the games where you don't have, like, the non-team games, where you don't have significant changing of players that really change the dynamic.
You don't have
teams
to worry so much about rosters.
Yeah. You know, I would think that NASCAR online racing, sort of as a service, and or something like Tiger Woods golf as a service, or maybe tennis, like, because we don't see a lot of those kind of games anymore, although we do just get the golf club. So there's a golf game.
From Nova Scotia.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, very good. That's right. I don't know. It's just like I would think that maybe this could potentially work as a service, sort of a persistent, you know, but you'd be able to sort of keep up with the, you know, changes that happen season to season. I don't know.
I'm going to say this, and this is all theory on my part. I have no idea if this is true. But NASCAR in general, I think it's a pretty expensive license. Not only because,
I'm sure it
you
is.
Know, I mean, you know, and you know this, right? Like if you have an NFL, if you're doing the NFL game, right? Like you have to pay for the NFL license. You have to pay for the NFL PA license. Mm-hmm. you might, I don't know if that means all of the player likenesses come with that. I don't know if you have to deal with them separately, but I mean, even if you don't have to pay them separately, there's probably a lot of money spent on getting, you know, making sure the likenesses are approved. I think they might have to license every stadium. I don't know. But with a NASCAR game, I think the same thing is like, you know, they have to license, they have to get the NASCAR license. They have to license the drivers separately because there is no NASCAR Players Association or Drivers Association. I don't believe. I think they have to go through.
Napa.
There you go. That's actually an auto parts store. But
that's right.
Same thing with the tracks. I think they have to license the tracks separately. And then, course, when you're going to the different teams to license things like their liveries and their numbers are trademarked, like the design and style of the numbers on the car. And the sponsors that go with it, like, does M&M's come with a Joe Gibbs Racing contract? I have no idea. Does Interstate Batteries, does DuPont, does, you know, with all these different, I don't know. So I think they're paying a ton up front. And I think if they turn it into a service that they have to pay to keep running, it might be tough. And it might change what those contract negotiations
That's what I was going to say. Either way, it would have to work economically for both parties, and that would probably mean a change, right? And license and revenue share, but lower license, higher revenue share, whatever, you know, who knows? It seems to me like, because I always think of iRacing, right? That's a huge, persistent community, and it's very successful.
I think with iRacing, like they don't license particular series, and they don't license particular drivers. They license particular cars and liveries but they do that in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Right. Those are there forever. They're licensing, you know, with McLaren and with Honda and with Ford and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different, but yeah.
Good stuff.
I don't know. Be interesting.
Good stuff. Well, Greg Seward, again, the official racing correspondent, the Press Room podcast. Thank you, sir.
And, no problem.
Looking forward to hearing everything that you, and we'll get Dr. Ken on here as well, and maybe even see if we can get our good friend Senior NASCAR and Pete Dodd. You know, let's get all the racing guys together and talk about Forza in a couple weeks. What do you say?
I would go to a nice trip to England.
There you go. Maybe we can all just go there for real, record at a nice restaurant. Let's do that.
I'd be fine with that too.
Pete's paying.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, sir. And where can people find your great work?
You can find me every week on the Player One podcast over at playeronepodcast.com. Going on to actually by the time you're listening to this, we'll probably be in Las Vegas doing a live show at Scoop Fest.
That's right.
This October, yeah.
What day is that?
That is the 17th.
Okay, no.
I believe.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's the same date that weed becomes legal in Canada, but I'm not sure.
Oh, my. Very good.
Of course, then also, if you like the history of old video games, please check out Generation 16, generation-16.com, where I talk about the history of the Genesis via going through each one of its games in chronological order. And one last thing that I'll call out, which is, of course, something that's near and dear to me, is that I raise money year-round for Extra Life in the IWK Children's Health Center here in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I stream 3 times a week over Twitch.tv/Seward, raising money for that cause, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. So please come check it out and consider giving or subscribing. All the revenue that I earn through that channel is also donated to the hospital. So please come check it out.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. Enjoy the racing, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Special thanks to our sponsor, Nighthawk Pro Gaming by Netgear. Give your gaming PC the bandwidth it deserves. The XR500 is rated the top-performing gaming router by PC Gamer. You can trust that this router won't let anything on your network prevent you from having the ultimate gaming experience. So visit netgear.com/npg and learn how you can join the no-lag crew today. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you help make this podcast possible.